Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
rugged, pirate-esque, shoulder-length hair that I thought was wildly sexy.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty decent.
Where do you want me to begin with this whole thing?
I think the best place to start is, could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I am Captain Chris Staudinger. I run a travel video blog that documents the travels around the world of myself and my lovely lady, Tawny Clark.
How do we know each other?
Well, you are my cousin and have been for as long as I can remember. At least that's the story that I've always been told.
So, every now and then at like Thanksgiving or something, you would just come out with like one of these like bizarro stories from your travels. It just would blow my mind. The one I want you to tell today is that one about what happened to you in Burma when you were over there.
It's been a while, but I will give you the most accurate and unembellished account of it that I can. And this would have been 2006. I had done 2 semesters.
That sounds really dirty.
Yeah, I know, right? It's even better because it was the Robert C. Siemens. Ironically, though, it was actually semester at sea that was the really dirty one. You can only put 740 hormonally driven college students on a vessel and expect so much.
That sounds like one of those math problems where it's like, how many handshakes could you have if there's 740 students on a boat?
There's no part of my brain that wants to fathom any kind of handshaking that went on that vessel.
Like, what's Burma like?
There are some places that you travel and it's just, there's no connection to anything that you know. Burma has gone at great lengths to shut itself off and make sure that there is no Western influence there. At the time, U.S. relations with Burma, Myanmar were awful. And in fact, the week that we were docking there, Burma closed its doors to all U.S. visitors. And the only reason we got let in is because they didn't want to have an international incident denying all these college students. Everywhere you look are these gold pagodas. The country is littered with gold pagodas, and they're held in such high revere that nobody steals from them. So they're plated in solid gold, and a lot of them have, I mean, elaborate gems at the top, and no one steals them. But it's also just choked by diesel smog. I remember I wore one shirt for the 5 days we were there, and when I got back on the ship, I had to throw it away because it was completely black just from the smog in the air. It's a really surreal place. We docked on the western seaboard of it, right on the edge of the Straits of Malacca, and 3 weeks prior, the powers that be in Burma / Myanmar decided to withdraw everything from the traditional capital and move it to some secret location in the center of the country. They were trying to prevent U.S. espionage. The leaders were incredibly paranoid. They had just established a new dictatorship, and they decided that the best way to keep their secrets would be to just uproot everything and move it to a secret and new capital in the center of the country. The port was just this ridiculous facade for the rest of the country, because they had known far in advance that the ship had been coming to town and that it was going to be full of all of us. They went out of their way to make sure that it looked like Myanmar was this free, fun-loving, independent country where all dreams came true. You know, one great example of just how disconnect the actual people are is they love makeup, But the only makeup that they can use is this traditional gold powder that they make from a local plant. I was traveling with two friends at the time, my friend Dan and my other friend Meredith. And I had this rugged, pirate-esque, shoulder-length hair at the time that I thought was wildly sexy. And we wanted to explore, so we went inland quite a ways. So we just hopped on, it's kind of like a tuk-tuk. They're like little covered buses. But I remember we stopped at one town, and they had these gorgeous coins. They're square coins that they don't use anymore. And I wanted to buy them. And they said that there was no way I would have enough money. I couldn't spend $80 to buy one of these coins. And then Meredith took out her chapstick just to put it on. And the guy who was selling the coins flipped. He just started offering us stuff. And then we started going through other things. We ended up trading half a bottle of aspirin, two things of lipstick, one of chapstick, and I think like a case of blush for 20 of the coins, two swords, and like a traditional mask. Just how much they want things that are forbidden there, and the things that we take for granted are the hottest commodities there. All the things that we could never have thought to afford in our wildest dreams, no problem. So much of Myanmar, I'm not gonna say quiet, but felt very... very civilian, you know? There was a softer clamor to the rest of the country. It was contemplative.
Did you have any idea at this point that things were going to go south?
No, we had no idea. The first inkling that there might be trouble, and not many people spoke English, but one of the few people who did was on one of the little tuk-tuks with us, and he was telling me that my hair was going to be a problem. He was telling me that as part of the new regulations of the new government, it was illegal for anyone, foreigner or not, if they were a man, to have hair past their ears. It was an offense that you could be imprisoned for. He was really adamant that I should cut my hair. I didn't take it that seriously. I was very attached to my hair. Later on, they figured out that it was actually a pretty serious thing. So we just kept taking the buses deeper into the country. To this day, I don't know where we ended up. The bus stopped and we got off and we were looking for a hotel. And everywhere around us, I don't know, they looked like soccer fields maybe. And they were full of soldiers. And there were like command tents everywhere. And the whole place was just a buzz and in constant motion. It looked like they were preparing. But the thing that was the most striking about it was how impromptu it felt. I mean, this was clearly not a military town. The little town center where the market used to be had been completely overtaken by this military presence. And it very much had the feel of a place that had been a small agricultural village and then had been overrun and then just packed. You know, from the edge of the forest all through town, it was soldiers. Even at night, there were drills going on. There were shots being fired. It was just a thrum of activity. And like idiots, we were taking pictures. And we ended up at this huge house. And they're like, yeah, you can stay for the night. And they seemed really nervous. And we were out front of the house after we kind of arranged our accommodations. And I was taking pictures of the military drills going on, these long lines of soldiers. And the person who was running the house hostel really, really freaked out and pulled us inside. He told us that it was incredibly dangerous for us to be in that town, but he wouldn't tell us why. And he said that he and his brother could get us back to our ship that night if we wanted to. I mean, we looked like backpackers, you know? But that's precisely the kind of people who they would be on alert for. We looked like American spies. And it was a really sensitive topic at the moment, and we didn't think about it. We were horrible international travelers, you know, because they were in such a secretive state right then, and they had just sealed themselves off from American interaction.
Were you scared?
I was definitely apprehensive.
Did you believe him, or were you like, is this just like a crazy Burmese guy?
There is a feeling when you actually are in danger. There's that tingling. The whole time we'd been exploring the country, everyone was so incredibly friendly. It felt almost like a paradise in some ways. But in this one town, there was a palpable tension. And so that for me, I was like, okay, it is time to leave. So the guy who warned us ended up arranging for us to leave the country that night to get back to our ship. And that was a whole debacle because sale of gasoline in Myanmar at that point was on the black market. The government forbid anyone who wasn't a government personnel from selling it. And the only way they could buy it would be from a government station. So it was really early, right before dawn the next morning, that we ended up, we were in the back seat of this tiny little white sedan, and there were points where, if we were going through checkpoints or anything, we had to put our, they covered us with a blanket, and we put our bags on top of us in the back seat, so it looked like there was just stuff in there.
What are the roads like there?
Miserable. They're not comfortable at all. A lot of them are just rural dirt paths, more used for agricultural equipment than for cars. On the journey, there would be points, they had like fruit stands on the road, and they would pull up to these fruit stands and say something in Burmese, and the guys would like pull 5-gallon buckets out from behind the fruit stand and fill up the cars with it. I don't know where the black market stands got their gasoline. I don't know if they had surpluses or not. We never asked. I never even thought of it. When we arrived at the halfway point, the house, he drove into a garage in back, and they brought us into the kitchen and they sat us down, and the family had two kids, and it was as if they had never seen anyone, a foreigner, before. And they like touched us. They wanted to touch our faces and touch our hands. And there was a nervous wonder in the family. There was also a tension that was hard to disguise, where they definitely didn't want us there for too long. So I think we ended up spending like 4.5 hours driving, again, under this blanket, stopping to fill up at fruit stands as we were trying to get our way back to the main port where the ship was docked.
Yeah, so what was going through your head while you were like underneath all these blankets and bags in the back seat?
It was terrifying. We were so far removed from anything we knew at that point.
What were you scared of, though? Scared of them finding you, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was, there was something about that moment, because we realized that we were really at the mercy of the new government. There was no U.S. embassy. The ship has a very strict policy of not extracting you from any danger that you find yourself in. We were very much on our own at the time. They dropped us off on the edge of the main town at a big hotel, and we paid them these huge fistfuls of cash that had almost no value in US dollars. And we hugged and went our separate ways.
Why do you think they helped you?
I have no idea. you know, we did ask at the end. He just gave us a thumbs up. So that's one of those nebulous symbols that I'm going to be stuck to contemplate for the rest of my life. I don't know.
So what happened when you got back towards the port?
It was so terribly anticlimactic. The stark contrast between the Myanmar of the port and the Myanmar that we had just encountered, where, you know, people would trade their museum pieces for aspirin. That was, for me, the most surreal part, was coming back and then having everyone who had stayed in port feel like there was nothing wrong. I mean, obviously, we immediately told this story, and no one either believed it or thought anything of it, because their experience with Myanmar had been this, like, crazy bar town. In the course of a day, we had gone from this occupied military town where you could taste the fear in the air to what looked like a tourist resort. You know? It's like we drove through the Twilight Zone, and on the other end, everything was fine.
Did it change you at all?
Yeah, I always look at international relations with a vastly different perspective now. I was very naive at the time, and I believed that, you know, if you get your news feeds, that everything is under control. Nothing is ever what it sounds like in the news. And the funny part to me is that the things that are pacified are usually the worst, and the things that are sensationalized are usually not that bad. So yeah, definitely for me now, I never take things at face value.
Do you feel any guilt about anything?
Not guilt. I do feel, I feel pangs of stupidity at having been so naive, at having been so careless. I do think I was painfully ignorant of the situation that was going on, and I feel guilty perhaps for that. But as far as burdening anyone who helped us, I don't think so. It wasn't even really an option. They made it very clear that it was a duty for them, almost.
Yeah. That's a good way to sum it up, I think. So if someone wanted to find out more about some of your adventures, where would they go?
Well, they should absolutely want to find out more. And they should go to captainandclark.com, which has all of our adventures, mostly in video format, although a lot of text as well.
Captain Chris Staudinger and his girlfriend Tawny Clark are just about to head out the door to India on what they're calling their Maverick adventure. Be sure to check out their blog. It's fantastic, it's funny, and it's informative. That's captainandclark.com. Well, music on the show today from Lucky Dragons, Swamp Dog, and The Black Spot. And as you may know, the show now is streaming on iTunes, so if you like iTunes, be sure to head over there, give a search for Here Be Monsters, and subscribe, rate, comment, and download the show, all from iTunes. Next week, we're going to be talking about time travel.
It's very viable to travel into the future, but this issue of traveling into the past is complicated for everyone.
Thanks for listening.